And as we said, there's so much to get to today. The Royals make a big-time shakeup in the trade market. The Chiefs make a decision regarding a player that they have had on the roster for several years now. The All-Star Game and what our thoughts were about the Royals that were participating specifically, as well as the overall atmosphere of the All-Star Game itself. We didn't get a chance yesterday. We weren't on. That was Bink, who got a chance to talk about the Trey Smith extension, which officially came down the pike yesterday. He will not be on the franchise tag, signing that four-year deal. So we may get into some more depth on that, as well as the Sauce Gardner deal and what that means for at least one specific Kansas City Chief. Hint, hint, he plays the same position as Sauce Gardner, and a whole lot more. No guests for today's show, so it's just going to be Chris, myself, and you guys here over the next 3 hours. But let's dive right in with the two local news stories of the day today. And let's begin with a sort of a head-scratching move, a little bit, by the Kansas City Royals, excuse me, making a trade today with the Pittsburgh Pirates to bring back Adam Frazier. Frazier, of course, was with the Royals last season on a one-year deal. He hit a lowly 202, by far and away the worst season of his major league career. In 104 games, he had 4 home runs and 22 RBIs with a .282 on base percentage, struck out 59 times to 22 walks. In fact, last season, this is not a joke, last season, Adam Frazier had more strikeouts than walks and hits combined. That's the year he had for the Royals last year. Goes back to Pittsburgh, where he began his career in 2016. And so far this year, he's been much better. In 78 games, he's hit .255. He's already got more hits this year than he had all of last season in about 30 less plate appearances or 30 less at-bats on the year thus far. His strikeout numbers are better. The pop is obviously not going to be there. Adam Frazier's never been a power bat. I mean, 13 is his career high for home runs. But traditionally, he's been a guy that gets on base with pretty good regularity. He's a career .260 hitter. His on-base percentage hovers around .330. So far this season, he's got an OBP of .318. So what do the Royals send away? Well, they sent Cam Devaney, a guy who just a couple of months ago, if not a month ago, every Royals fan in the Midwest, across the world, was campaigning to see Cam Devaney come up to Kansas City and provide for this team. I mean, early on when he was with Omaha, guy was on a torrid pace, man. I mean, he was hitting .300. It seemed like he was hitting a home run or two every single week. Looks like 69 games for AAA Omaha this year. He ended up hitting .272 with 18 homers and 55 RBIs in 69 games of action. He gets called up to Kansas City last week and never played. And so it's a one-for-one deal here between Kansas City and Pittsburgh. Devaney for Adam Frazier. And I'm seeing a lot of people that are questioning this move, and I believe rightfully so. It's kind of a strange move to trade away a guy in Cam Devaney, who many thought highly of, for a guy in Adam Frazier, who is considerably older at this point. He's 33 years old. He'll be 34 next season, who you literally had on the roster 6 months ago. He was on this team 6 months ago. But Adam Frazier is a guy who is very much a utility player in his career. He's primarily a second baseman, but he can play short. He can play third. He can play any of the three outfield spots. He gives you a little bit of something that, you know, a guy like Nick Lofton, who the Royals or Michael Massey have kind of tried to fit that billing for the Royals this year, and it hasn't really worked. Just have to hope that Adam Frazier stays around where he's hit this so far this year in Pittsburgh and doesn't go back to the form that he was in last year in Kansas City. And, you know, there's a lot of people very upset about the Royals trading away Cam Devaney. It's not like Cam Devaney was this 19, 20, 21, even a 22 or 23-year-old prospect. He's 28 years old, and he's finally in the big leagues. So, yes, obviously, there's a five-year age discrepancy between those two guys, but Adam Frazier's a proven big leaguer. Cam Devaney hasn't taken a plate appearance in the show at this point. And if you're Kansas City, if you believe in a guy like Adam Frazier and what he can do this year versus what he did last year, okay, fine by me. I don't think that this is going to move the needle one way or the other for this Royals team, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this is one, is a move that it might be a situation where they really liked him in the clubhouse. And maybe he helps some of those younger guys along there. I think that's probably what it is, more so than we're looking for an impact guy that can play a bunch of different positions. I think, you know, we can kind of, you know, say like the Mark Canha thing hasn't worked. And I think they're kind of looking for some versatility there. They're looking for someone that is obviously got a veteran presence there that can kind of chip in and help some of these younger guys get along. I don't know why anybody would be mad about them trading away Devaney, though, because as you brought up, he's a 28-year-old AAA player. He has never played in the major leagues, and this is a guy that played in college for 3 years at Elon University, and then he got drafted by the Brewers and stayed in their system for almost 6 years. And now you're like, people had hoped that he was going to be a major league player. It's like the same thing to me that what happened with like John Rave. Where like John Rave was a guy that started off the season pretty decent. And because you had guys like Hunter Renfroe out there who weren't doing anything in the outfield, and MJ Melendez wasn't doing anything in the outfield, you had all these people come in and they were pushing for, oh, John Rave, look, he's hitting pretty decent down in AAA. Oh, we should bring him up and try him out. And he has a negative war, 176 batting average. He's terrible. He's only played in 35 games because they can't find any reason to get him out there because he was never good. And he was another guy similar to Devaney where he's past the 25-year-old, past 25 years old, I think he's 27, and had never played in the majors for a reason. They had him in their major league camp in spring training. He wasn't good enough to make the roster, and we know that their outfield was pretty weak going mm-hmm. into the year. So you look at Devaney, and it's like Devaney, if he was good enough, he would have had an opportunity to get called up way earlier, and he never proved that he was good enough.
Yeah, agree.
So it's like, what would be the frustration with that part? Now, I can understand if you're frustrated that they didn't make a bigger splash with the trade by going out and get someone better than Frazier. I can get that part because I certainly am pretty underwhelmed by the acquisition of Frazier, but I don't get why anybody would be mad about them trading away Devaney, because I think it's very obvious when you look at his age, you look at the fact that he's still playing in AAA, that there's a reason why he hasn't gotten called up.
Right.
And I'm going to trust the two major league teams that he's played for that have refused to call him up over, you know, me going jumping on Baseball Reference and looking at his stats and saying, oh, well, that's better than what MJ was doing when he was up here.
It just has the feel of, you mentioned, you know, we mentioned Nick Lofton, you mentioned John Rave, we're talking about Cam Devaney, right? Those guys feel to me, at least at this point in their careers, right? And for a guy like Devaney, I don't know if there's much room at this point to improve upon it. They feel like triple or quadruple A players little bit, right?
They are 100% 4A players.
They're not quite major leaguers, not everyday guys, but they're too talented to remain in AAA for the long haul, right? You talk about John Rave. I am still kind of perplexed by the Royals deciding to move Drew Waters back down to AAA this year and not John Rave. I understand that Waters really, really struggled in the month of May and June. I understand that, but he still hit the ball better than Rave has, at least thus far. And I do find it interesting when you look at the splits between these guys. You know, we talk about Devaney and the way that he burst onto the scene this year after hitting 250 in limited ABs in March. He hit 395 in April. He then hit 268 in May. In the month of June, he hit 202. And again, in limited ABs in July, he hit 368. But that was in five games and in 19 at-bats. So he was a guy that really was kind of trending in the wrong direction for this Royals baseball team and this Royals organization. Adam Frazier is kind of the exact opposite. He hit 200 in March, 254 in April, 253 in May, and he hit 262 in June. So he had his best month in the month of June. So he is getting better as the season has progressed thus far. In limited at-bats in July, he's hitting .333. So I like this move, and I love you mentioning the veteran presence. Because this Royals baseball team, outside of Salvador Perez, especially when we talk about position players, it's a pretty young roster, right? Vinny Pasquantino's been around the block a time or two, but he's not a guy that you can obviously lean on all the time as a guy that can provide you with a ton of veteran leadership, right? Bobby Witt Jr. has been with this team as much as anybody in terms of a position player outside of Salvi. He's still 25 years old. So that's not a guy that you can lean on a lot. It's really Salvador Perez and Mark Canna. Those are the veterans that you have out in the field and in the batter's box for this Royals team. So bringing in another guy like Adam Frazier, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And when you look at Cam Devaney, if he's a quadruple A talent in our eyes, he's probably that in the eyes of some in Major League Baseball. Could you really have gotten better than Adam Frazier in a one-on-one-off deal? Right? Would you have had to have packaged another player, another prospect to improve and get yourself something better than Adam Frazier?
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, like, to me, this is a move where I think the Royals are hoping that this helps them find, because we talked about this on Monday, this helps them find the answer over the next couple weeks. Are we still in it or not? And they have to figure that out here soon, because they do have to figure out if they're going to move some of these guys, like a Seth Lugo, you know, maybe a Chris Bubich. Well, I disagree with that, but it's still very possible that that happens too. They got to figure some things out here, and these next 2 weeks are going to be really vital for that. And so I think the Royals are trying to do the best thing they can, the best move that they can, without giving up too much, to try to see if they can make that one small move that helps them get on the right track. And then if they can get healthy going into the fall, maybe they got a chance to make the playoffs. But, you know, I understand if you're underwhelmed by the addition of Adam Frazier, because I am underwhelmed by the addition of Adam Frazier. My problem is with the anger over Cam Devaney, like he's some future great player that the Royals shipped away for nothing. It's like, he's 28 years old, and I mean, he's much older than a lot of the young core players that you have in your roster who are in the major leagues, and he's never played in the major leagues. So, like, we're not talking about the next Whit Merrifield, more than likely. This is probably a guy that maybe never has a major league career.
913-586-7965 is our number. Taking a look, I'm guessing the Royals liked Adam Frazier because he's hitting well with runners on base this year. Anything to help the offense at this point will help. No question.
Yeah.
And he is hitting better. I mean, I think the trade for him already puts him in the top three, at least for this Royals team, in terms of batting average with runners in scoring position. Someone says he's a vibes guy and he's going to unlock Cags. Well, I don't think that those two play all that similar, but again, it's a veteran. It's a guy who's been in this league for a long time who can give some of that friendly clubhouse advice to Jack Caglione alongside Salvi and Mark Canna a little bit as well. It certainly can't hurt. I got a 913 here, says, welcome to this year's Ben Zobrist. I feel
think that's
like you're
sarcasm.
Shooting a little bit further than you
I
need.
Think yeah. That's sarcasm.
Yeah, I think that's you're biting off a little more you could chew.
I think that's sarcasm.
If Adam Frazier becomes Ben Zobrist,
it'll be one of the greatest trades in Royals history.
Yeah, the Royals are going to make the postseason. No question.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't see that one happening. 660 says Frazier did absolutely nothing on this team last year. This is not a winning move, and I hope this isn't their one move. He was bad here last year, and he was. That is a fair thing to point out, that Adam Frazier hit below .205 last year for this Royals team in over 100 games. But again, I look at this Royals team as a team that really has got to figure out what's going on 6 through 9. Because 1 through 5 is doing its job right now. Jonathan India is doing his job in the leadoff spot. As much as people want to hate against the guy, he's hitting nearly .350 or .250. His on-base percentage is, I believe, up over .330 or close to .330. He's been a much better leadoff hitter than anybody the Royals put in that spot a year ago. Bobby is Bobby right now. Vinny has been fantastic this year. Salvador Perez has really started to figure it out the last month and a half. And Mikel Garcia is an all-star. One through five is not your issue right now if you're Kansas City. It's six through nine. That's the issue at the moment. And a guy like Adam Frazier is somebody you feel comfortable sliding in to that six through nine spot. Maybe he can play some left field as a guy that has played a lot of outfield positions. He's played, you know, 35 games in the outfield this year for Pittsburgh. And on days where Jonathan India needs a day off or they want Jonathan India to DH, okay, now, you know, he can go play left field or he can go play second base and Lofton or John Rave or whoever, if the Royals decide to bring somebody else in, would be great. We'll see what happens.
Somebody on the text line from the 816 says, what did he say? He said, I think people are worried Cam could be the next Brent Rooker, Ryan O'Hearn, Mike Avilas, etc. And like the problem with that is that one, O'Hearn and Rooker were both in their mid-20s when they got called up to the major leagues. Avilas was 27 when he got called up, so I can understand that. But the difference, though, is that you're talking about a guy who's 28 years old and has not even shown any sort of promise to be a major league player thus far. Like, he's not a great AAA player. He's a pretty good AAA player. And I think because of that, it's more than likely that if he does have a major league stint, he's not going to have an Avilas, O'Hearn, Rooker type major league stint. Avilas got called up in, what was it, like 08, 09, and he played until 2017.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about a guy who played well into his 30s. I'm not sure that Cam Devaney is going to play in the major leagues for very long if he does play in the majors. And I don't think the Royals had any confidence that he was going to be able to do that, which is the reason why they traded him.
Right. I mean, O'Hearn was, he played for Kansas City for 5 years. In 5 years with the Royals, the guy hit .219.
Yeah, he was not a good hitter.
You gave him ample opportunity in Kansas City to become a great hitter, and it just didn't work. He got a change of scenery in Baltimore, and he unlocked himself a little bit. That's just sort of it happens, man, right? Those sort of strange, weird things occur sometimes in baseball. I want to go through a few more of these messages we have in the text line here coming up, and as well as talk about the other big news story regarding Kansas City in the news cycle today. The Kansas City Chiefs parting ways with a wide receiver that's been on the roster for several years at this point and has been a media darling every single offseason he's been with the Chiefs. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
All right, we're getting into the weeds with the numbers here, or at least I am. I'm starting to buy in on this Adam Frazier trade a little bit. I don't know if that means I'm ready to be hurt again.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Am I ready to be hurt again, Chris? Whoa, is that what that's telling me?
Don't talk yourself into this trade.
I'm telling
they're
you.
They're not trading for Ben Zobrist.
I'm not saying they are.
I understand his numbers with runners in scoring position.
It's hitting .289.
That's cool. We know how baseball works, and it's a game of ups and downs. Let him go out there and play first, because would you be shocked if he regresses to the mean?
Absolutely not. In fact, I'm highly anticipating it.
Yeah, so I'm saying. So, like, let's let Adam Frazier put on his jersey first and then suit up and play, and then we can start hyping him up. Because we saw him last year, and there's a reason why he is now on his second different team in this calendar year. And it's because he went for someone that probably is – may not even play a major league game.
Yeah.
Let's let him go out there and prove it first.
It's pretty impressive. He played for 5.5 years in Pittsburgh from 2016 to 2021, and then he got traded to the Padres, and he finished up the back half of the year with San Diego. Then he played a year in Seattle, a year in Baltimore, a year with the Royals. Then he went back to Pittsburgh. Now he's back with Kansas City. So he's played on 5 different teams across 7 different stints at this point in his career. He's 33 years old. But he's hitting .289 with runners in scoring position, which right now puts him second on this Kansas City Royals team. The only guy better with runners in second and third, Bobby Witt Jr. Nick Lofton in limited at-bats is hitting .333 with runners in scoring position. And Dairon Blanco is 1-for-2 with runners in scoring position. Jonathan India is hitting .281. Yeah, Salvi's hitting .274.
We didn't need to bring up that Dyron Blanco stat.
It was right there. It's at the top.
We didn't need to bring that one up.
It's at the top of the list. I had to mention it.
1-for-2. We could have just skipped over that one.
1-for-2. My man's efficient. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's not very many opportunities.
No. It's a limited sample size for sure. Adam Frazier's hitting .310 on this season when runners are on base at all. So, and when you look at his on-base percentages with those two things, he's got a .352 OBP with runners in scoring position, .351 with runners on. So not only is he hitting the ball well when he's got runners on base, he's getting on base on top of that. He's giving other guys behind him in the order an opportunity to drive in runs.
I just hope that he hits .250 still.
Yeah,
fair. .250. If you hit .250 and we can kind of bounce you around to different spots, I'm cool with that. That's all I need.
I mean, .250.
I don't need him to be the next great player on the team. Just hit .250.
.250 would put him firmly in the order when you look at
.270 with runners in scoring position. That's great. That's excellent.
That's top five.
That's awesome. I'd love that.
.270 with runners in scoring position puts him top five on this Royals team.
I'd love that.
And, you know, I was looking at that during the break and I thought it was interesting because we're sitting here talking in the text line about the Adam Frazier, Cam Devaney trade. And, you know, just going down the list here, right? I got an 816 here that says you would have to think the Royals are going to make another move before the trade deadline. If not, Adam Frazier is the best you can get. This doesn't feel to me like this is the only thing that the Royals are doing.
It depends on what they're looking like going towards the deadline.
But if
they have a losing record over the next couple weeks before the deadline, I'm not sure they're going to be that aggressive. I would put my money on Lugo getting moved.
Exactly. Either way, I think either way, there's going to be more trades that come down the pipe for this Royals team.
I think the only way they get more help for this year is if they go on a nice little run coming out of the All-Star break, which 100%. I think is what they were insinuating. Like, I think they were insinuating that they hope more help arrives, and I'm not sure that's going to happen unless the next 2 weeks are really nice for the Royals.
Somebody else in the text line says it's not hard to figure out. He says Jonathan India is getting packaged with Lugo and being shopped. So we think that Seth Lugo and Jonathan India are going to get traded. The Royals still have another year of team control for Jonathan India. So he will be under contract for this Royals team next year. You brought in Jonathan India to try to fix some of the woes that you had at the leadoff position last season. He's done that. He's hitting nearly .250 this year. He has been that guy at the top of the order that you can reasonably rely on this year. I don't know why he is hitting .250 and his on-base percentage is a .332, which looking at this is third on this Royals team behind only Mikel Garcia and Bobby Witt Jr. So Why would you make a decision 6 months after trading for him with the Reds and giving away Brady Singer? You're just going to trade him away again when you still have another year of team control left. I don't think Jonathan India is going anywhere for this Royals team. Lugo, yeah, but that's going to be very dependent on what happens over the next 2 weeks starting on Friday.
Yeah, I don't think you make that. I don't think you move Singer if you weren't pretty confident that India was going to be able to step his game up to the next level. And I don't think that would be very uncharacteristic for the Royals to give up on a guy so quickly, unless they could just rip a team off and just get like two of their top 10 prospects in a deal for like this. And adding India is the appropriate value you would need to make that happen. That's the only way I think that would happen. I don't think they're going to trade India. I don't think that makes any sense for real, especially for a team that really right now is trying to find diamonds in the rough and a team that is very obviously known for probably giving guys too many chances. I mean, see MJ Melendez, they give guys probably way too many chances, and I think they'll probably do that with India too.
Somebody asked in the text line, speaking of MJ Melendez, they asked if he was still struggling. He's been better. He hit .247 in June after he hit .243 in May. Now his power numbers were better in May than they were in June. In July though, in 46 at bats, he's hitting .304. So he's playing better. I'm still not buying it. I still will not be waiting around with bated breath for MJ Melendez to re-arrive in Kansas City for the third time. Because again, I don't think it affects the bottom line at this point. MJ Melendez feels like a quadruple A player.
Yeah. He can, and he's not killing it right now. He's hitting under 250 in AAA right now.
Yeah.
It's not like he's absolutely, he's not doing what Cags was doing when he got called up. Right now, he's just, you know, he's hitting all right. And that's been his biggest issue is that after, because what was he, I think it was his low A year when he was playing for Lexington. Like, he killed it that year. And since then, he has not had the kind of years you would hope for someone with his level of talent. Because he showcased a lot of power, had a pretty good average, and you were like, okay, they might have something with this MJ kid, especially if they can move him to the outfield because he was a catcher. And you look at him now, and it's like, man, you see the talent. He can't hit, though.
Oh. And with any real consistency.
And his defense has gotten a lot better in the outfield, but, I mean, he still makes mistakes here and there. But, yeah, I mean, the lack of any consistency at the plate has been a major issue. And I don't know if you're betting on that at all.
No. Last one I'll look at here in the text line, at least for the time being, before we hit the break. And this is one that I hadn't thought of and probably will not think about again. Somebody, an 816 says, what if we ship out Noah Cameron and Vinny Pasquantino and ask for someone big? A blockbuster trade with the Royals would be nice.
For who
and for why is my question. I mean, Vinny Pasquantino is having the best year of his career so far this year after he had the best year of his career last year. He was the American League Player of the Month 2 months ago and is hitting 300 since June 1st. Since May 1st, I should say. He's still got 3 years of team control left after this season. He's got 3 years of arbitration coming up in 26, 27, and 28 before he becomes an unrestricted free agent at 31 years old in 2029. Meanwhile, Noah Cameron still has 2 more years of pre-arbitration left in 26 and 27 before 3 years of arbitration in 28, 29, and 30. So you would give away 8 years of team control for what exactly? It would have to be a bat, and it would have to be it would have to be an absolute superstar at that point. And what superstar out there right now is playing on a team that could justifiably move them?
And on top of that, like from a long-term standpoint, the value might not even be there because Vinny Pasquantino is a guy that we think has a chance to be a great player for the Royals. Noah Cameron looks like he has a strong chance to be a great player for the Royals. And so you're talking about long-term success in a small market with a team that can't afford to go out there and have the kind of payrolls that teams in the really large markets can have. And you've got many years of team control with these guys, many years of service time years with these guys before you got to give them the big money there. Unless you decide to convert some of those service time years into actual, like, decent salaried years, unless you sign them to an extension in that regard, you've got a fair amount of very team-friendly control over those players. Why would you get rid of that? Like, because you presume, based on how they're performing right now, they're probably going to get better. And if they're going to get better, why would you move them?
Yeah, I don't think that move makes a ton of sense. I mean, you look at, I'm just spitballing, right? It's like, okay, you're going to look for a great contact bat. You look at the guys who are hitting above 300 in Major League Baseball this year. Alejandro Kirk, Jake Myers, Jeremy Pena, Will Smith, Jonathan Aranda, Jacob Wilson, Aaron Judge. None of those guys are going anywhere. Jacob Wilson's a rookie with 5 years of team control left, and the other guys are on playoff postseason contending teams. Okay, let's take a look at the guys who are among the best power bats in baseball. Cal Raleigh, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Eugenio Suarez, Kyle Schwarber, Seikai Suzuki, Pete Crow Armstrong, Riley Green, James Wood, Juan Soto. None of those guys are going anywhere either, right? James Wood still has many, many years of team control left under him, and the other guys are all on postseason contending teams. I really don't think those guys are that you're not going to get what you want back in return other than major big time top one, or, you know, a handful of top 10 prospects in somebody's system. and those aren't guarantees. You've got two very proven players with 8 combined years of team control left in Vinny Pasquantino and Noah Cameron. Continue to dance with the one that brought you a little bit. Those two guys are massive contributors for this team. I don't think they should be going anywhere, not when they're young enough and have enough years of team control left where it makes sense to hold on to them for the long haul. Somebody like a Seth Lugo or a Michael Wacha, those make sense as trade pieces because they're veterans. You don't know when inevitably Father Time is going to rear its ugly head and cause some regression. That's not really something you have to worry about all that much with a 26-year-old Noah Cameron and a 27-year-old Vinny Pasquantino.
Someone on the text line from the 816 brings up how they years ago a caller called in or texted in or whatever about trading Chase Daniel for Tony Gonzalez back in the day, and it's like, yeah, that is very much what the whole trade Vinny and Noah for some unnamed great player in a blockbuster trade. That's very much what it seems like. And it's always funny whenever people call into Vern's postgame show and they're like, oh, well, we should trade this person or that person. And Vern always says, for who? Because like, you know, we can sit here and be like, oh, they should trade whoever. Like, I remember when you know, Chris Getz was on the team. Oh, they should trade Chris Getz. They should trade Omar Infante. For who? For what?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's easy to sit around and just bring up this mythical blockbuster trade, but you got to name players. Otherwise, there's no trade logic whatsoever. So you could just go out there and say, oh, well, we should get a blockbuster for those two. But we don't know if there's even a team out there that would value a superstar player that they could trade there.
Yeah.
So it's just like, this is the reason why I don't like doing a whole lot of like, oh, let's entertain these trade offers, because we don't know.
We have no idea. Yeah, sure. Let's go. So let's do it. All right. Vinny Pasquantino and Noah Cameron for Paul Skeens. Who says no? That's right. Everybody.
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 No.
The Pirates say no to that because the Pirates want to hold on to Paul Skeens, or they want to get an absolute haul from somebody like the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets or somebody like that.
Yeah.
The Royals are going to say no because that doesn't make them a better baseball team. You get rid of Vinny Pasquantino, a guy who leads your team and is in the top 30 of baseball in RBIs.
You can't hit.
Your offense just gets worse for a team that already can't hit. And you give away a really good starting pitcher for a really good starting pitcher. Maybe for the best starting pitcher in baseball in Paul Skeens, yes. But again, it's not going to affect your overall win shares or increase your chances of making the postseason. Not in my opinion. 913-586-7965 is our number. Much more coming up. We'll continue to look at the text line throughout the show. But I want to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs making a decision regarding a player who has been with the team for several years now and has had several injury issues, off-the-field issues, and is now going to be looking for a new home. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours. Logan Weber, Chris Unocero, 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Chiefs social media in shambles right now. Absolutely heartbroken. The announcement came down the pike today. Chiefs waiving wide receiver Justin Ross. He apparently, according to Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, he asked to be waived last week. He asked to be let out of his contract with the Chiefs and search for a new home a week ago. Chiefs granted that request today. Ross, who was an undrafted free agent in 2022, signed with the Chiefs, where he's been with the team for the last 3 years, has had a handful of injury issues and off-the-field issues that has limited his time with the Chiefs. And after what looked to be, you know, a superstar in the making after his freshman year at Clemson, in which he burst onto the scene and wowed everybody, he, including in that national championship game against Alabama when he went absolutely nuts. I think he had like 150 yards receiving in that game and a touchdown to help the Tigers beat the Crimson Tide. He ended up with a huge injury in 2019 in which he had to have like spinal surgery or something insane like that, and came back in 2021, but just never got back to the form that you saw from him in his freshman year. Now, sounds like Justin Ross is going to be looking for somewhere else to make his NFL hay. And I think he'll land somewhere, I think. You know, does he get a 53-man roster spot and play regular snaps for an NFL team? I'm not entirely sure of that. I would lean against it, to be honest. But obviously, there's going to be an opportunity for him somewhere that was a better one than he had in Kansas City, where he was in a logjam behind that top four of Rashee and Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown, and now the rookie wide receiver Jalen Royals, as well as even Juju Smith-Schuster.
I got to keep it a buck. I don't know why he stayed here so long.
I don't either.
He was never a fit for the Chiefs offense. The Chiefs offense does not do big wide receivers like that. The biggest you're going to get at wide receiver for the Chiefs is 6'1", 200 pounds, 205 pounds. That's it. That's Juju Smith-Schuster. That's Rashee Rice. That's Jalen Royals. That's as big as it's going to get. Andy does not draft the really tall receivers. You know, he's 6'4". Andy does not draft those guys for years. Like my co-host on the Character Concerns podcast, Bink, always, oh yeah, they need a tall guy. They need a guy who's 6'4", 6'5". They have had opportunities to get those guys, and they never draft them.
Shout out Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah.
Chiefs legend with two career catches in a KC uniform.
Yeah, they brought him in, and yeah, he played, what was it? I think it was just one game, that Chargers game.
He played three games, technically. He had two catches for 26 yards.
That was it. So it was like, they clearly do not value really big wide receivers like that. So the fit to me never really seemed to be there. And so it was a little weird why, A, he was brought in the first place, and B, why they kept him around so long, and why he stayed so long. Because there are other teams out there that are, you know, like he could have gone to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay already has a 6'5 wide receiver. They know how to use guys like him. So it just didn't make any sense why he stayed here, when if you know Andy's scheme, Andy doesn't really covet guys as big as him with his skill set. His skill set is not what Andy covets at all. And it was just a weird fit. So hopefully it works out with him wherever he ends up going. And hopefully him and his agent choose a team that's a better fit for him, because Kansas City was never a fit for him.
No, it wasn't. Honestly, I think that the opportunity to win a Super Bowl can have its positives. It can pay
yeah, but
its
multiple
dividends.
Teams can win Super Bowls. The Chiefs aren't the only team that's capable of winning the Super Bowl. It's just like, to me, it's like if I were in his shoes, because he wasn't drafted, means that money's probably a little tight for him.
Mm.
He's not going out here and getting paid the big money. He doesn't have security like a lot of these other guys do. He's been a practice squad guy for most of his career. You probably want to go somewhere where you're going to have some security, somewhere that you're going to be coveted more, and that wasn't going to be Kansas City.
Right. I agree with you completely. I just, again, yes, multiple teams can win a Super Bowl every single year. I don't discount that at all. 3 years, the guy was with the Chiefs. He won two Super Bowls, and the Chiefs went to a third. I mean, winning can fool people into a certain extent. And maybe he really did think that he was going to have an opportunity with this Chiefs team, as many Chiefs fans thought that as well. Every training camp, there was a video or two that would surface on social media of him making some tremendous one-handed contested catch or something, and you're like, oh, he's going to be that guy. And then there would be an injury, or there would be an off-the-field issue, or he would just be in a logjam at receiver, and it never ever panned out for Justin Ross in Kansas City. So now we anxiously await to see where the guy lands next.
Are we anxiously awaiting?
No, probably not.
No. I mean, like I said, I hope he finds a roster. I hope it works out for him.
Calmly? Patiently?
Yeah, hopefully he ends up on a team where he can make the roster, get some more financial security, and maybe he ekes out a spot in the league. But it never was going to work here.
No, I don't think it was going to either. And when you look at it seems as though the Chiefs thought that as well, right? If you thought you had something in Justin Ross, why do you draft Rashee Rice 2 years ago? Why do you draft Xavier Worthy last year and sign Hollywood Brown? Why do you trade and try to bring Mecole Hardman back? Why do you bring Juju Smith-Schuster back?
Why do you never really use him in games?
You never
when he
gave
was
him
on
a
your
chance.
Roster right. Sometimes. There were times where he was on the 53 and they didn't even use him.
It all feels very Jody Fortson in a lot of ways, right? There was a lot of Chiefs fans on social media obsessed with Jody Fortson. And when was Jody Fortson going to get a chance? And Fortson dealt with injury issues throughout his time in Kansas City. But when he was healthy, he did play a little bit. You know, he actually caught passes and contributed a ton to this Chiefs team. We never saw that come to fruition with Justin Ross. And yet everybody was just waiting for that day to inevitably come. And it never did. And I never quite understood why people were so high on Justin Ross every year.
So football is one of those sports where it's easy to talk yourself into the bench guys. Because you watch them in college, or maybe you see them in preseason, they have one really good game, or they look really good in camp, and it's easy to talk yourself into guys on the bench.
Oh, all the time. Even guys that start, right? I mean, we had this conversation back a few months ago, and I'm still in a daily battle with myself thinking about when fantasy football drafts become a thing here in the next few weeks, and I'm sitting there in round 8, round 9, I've got my running backs, I've got my receivers, you know, maybe I've got a quarterback at that point in my draft as well, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, and Kyle Pitts is right there on the board. Kyle Pitts is sitting right there at tight end.
If
it happens every year, somebody gets lulled into believing in Kyle Pitts again, and you fall flat on your face with it.
As long as it's not before round 10, I think you might be all right. Just don't take him before round 10.
It's fair. But, you know, round 8, round 9 comes around.
Don't do that.
If Kelce and Sam Laporta and George Kittle and Brock Bowers, all those guys are off the board.
They're definitely going to be off the board, but they're still better tight ends.
It's a boomer bust pick right there in Kyle Pitts. And then I just scour the waiver wire for another rookie wide receiver to fly up out of nowhere and do great things like Sam Laporta did 2 years ago. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of After Hours here on this Wednesday night. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Well, we now have just one first-round pick in the NFL still waiting for a contract to sign. Earlier today, it was announced that the Denver Broncos and rookie cornerback Jadai Barron reached a 4-year, $18 million deal with a $9.8 million signing bonus. Barron, who is a former All-American at Texas, was one of only two first-round picks that had still not agreed to terms on a rookie contract. The other is Shamar Stewart, who is still waiting. He was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals in the middle of round 1 back in April's draft. And in fact, he has gone so far at this point in waiting for what's going on that he is back in College Station practicing with Texas A&M. He has been with the team for a couple of weeks now. He's been, according to Bud Elliott of CBS Sports, fully involved in workouts with the Aggies. This is an interesting situation because Elliott reported that he could potentially try to go back to school if he wanted to. If he could not reach an amicable agreement with Cincinnati, he could try to go back to school. Now, the problem is the NCAA would prevent him from being able to return because he's already drafted. He could try to fight it in court, right?
Yeah.
It seems like in the last 5 years, anytime anybody has taken the NCAA to court over antitrust laws, the NCAA has lost. How long a decision like that could stand, I don't know. Even if he did manage to take the NCAA to court, win his antitrust lawsuit and go back to school at Texas A&M and then re-entered the draft in 2026, the Cincinnati Bengals would still hold his draft rights. They would continue to hold his draft rights through the first draft after his eligibility expires. So if he doesn't sign with the Bengals and goes back to school, he would have to then wait until 2027 for another NFL team to draft him, meaning he's not just giving up 1 year, he's giving up 2 years of NFL time and NFL money with this situation.
And he's giving up the opportunity to, in 2 to 3 years after that, to be able to get a second contract, which is where the big money is. And especially because he's an edge rusher, that could be, you know, 35 plus million if it turns out to be a really good to great edge rusher. So, yeah, that's a tough spot.
I'm not sure how this whole thing is going to play out. And I hate this for Shamar Stewart because I feel like he has a legitimate gripe with the way the Cincinnati Bengals have handled his contract situation. This is just typical Cincinnati Bengals at work here. We talked about it in the bullpen prior to the show, Chris. You brought up that this is now the second year in a row that the Cincinnati Bengals are the last team in the NFL to come to terms with their first-round draft pick.
And they haven't even done that.
And they haven't this year.
But this will be if they do, it'll be the second straight year that they were the last team to come to terms with their first-round pick.
They kept dragging, you know, and teasing T. Higgins along year after year after year with the franchise tag stuff and the promises of the extension, and it never came. It seems like in the last 10 years of the NFL, the only two guys that the Cincinnati Bengals have not minced words about and have actually signed to extensions are Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow. Everybody else is getting typical Cincinnati Bengals treatment with this organization, who doesn't seem serious enough to want to win on a regular basis. 913-586-7965 is our number. Hour number two coming up. I want to recap the All-Star game. Not a trio, because that's three. I don't know what the term for four would be. Four Royals competing in the All-Star game yesterday. Three of them had pretty good days. The fourth kind of struggled. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about why the All-Star game has a swing off, but not the Home Run Derby, and so much more. This is After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside producer Chris Unocero, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.